Ladies and gentlemen, in the blue corner, standing at a sleek 5'11", 245 pounds, the tumultuous tempest of technique, Thomas Lilly. And in the red corner, at a curvaceous 5'11", 315 pounds, the jovial juggernaut of judgment, John Cheryl Sheridan. A meeting of the masters of mastication. Turn your attention as they delve deep into all things lifting and more. This is Peak Speak.
Okay, welcome to the Thomas Only Podcast.
The Thomas Only Podcast, because you came up with the whole name. Are we going to out-angle each other the whole time?
Yes.
Excellent. I feel like that's the only way to do this. I'm putting on my Will Crozier neck. I think you have to have a neck to put on the Will Crozier neck.
Where are the women?
Alright. How are you hosting this? Am I hosting this? How are we doing this?
I think you're hosting it because you're bigger.
That's fair. That's fair. Alright, so episode zero. A to be determined podcast name. If you've got any great suggestions, let us know. In the comments below.
I hate it when people do that.
It works. That's the problem. Okay. Like the call to action thing. It's fucking terrible. I hate it as well. But it works.
People will give us terrible names.
Yeah, look, I'm not actually going to put that bit in. We're going to cut that bit out. That we're going to keep the Will Crozier neck though.
Okay, excellent.
Because I think that's my favourite part so far. Okay. Alright, so this is episode zero of a podcast with which we have not figured out a name for yet. The idea today is to just do a bit of an intro, talk about who we are and how we got into this whole lifting game, and then and sort of go from there.
Yeah, so the idea is with Cheryl and I have been talking for a little while about starting a podcast of all things lifting in Australia, you know, bringing more education to the Australian market and creating something as informative as possible from people that are balls deep in the industry, I guess, in the powerlifting world. You said we were supposed to be casual.
I just laughed. I'm allowed to just laugh at things. I'm okay. Not judging you. I'm just laughing with you.
Okay.
I'll tell you if I'm laughing at you. All right.
So this is episode zero before the official release of the podcast.
Yeah.
And the purpose of this is just for you to learn a little bit more about us, because we're extremely vain and want you to think we are amazing people.
Yeah. Which is why we're going to take our shirts off later. At least Thomas is. So Thomas, why don't you start? Who are you? Where do you come from?
Okay. So I'm Thomas Lilly. Most people know me because
You've got a famous dog on Snapchat.
I've got a famous dog on Snapchat, buddy. I own a gym called PTC Gold Coast, and I coach some really, really good lifters. And, yeah. So we were going to talk a little bit about how we got into lifting initially, and then how we got into powerlifting, and then go from there.
Yeah.
So maybe a quick introduction of yourself.
So my name is John Sheridan. I am born and bred on the mean streets of Thuggeranong in Canberra. And I own a gym called Burley Strength in Canberra. I coach some lifters also. I occasionally do some mediocre lifting myself. And yeah, that's me. I also have dogs. Not as famous as Buddy on Snapchat though. but that's a volume thing, I think.
Yes. So how did you get into lifting? Where did it all start for John Sheridan?
Man, I started lifting weights in high school. I was like 14 or 15. I think there was a certain point in, I can't remember, I think it was year 8 in high school, where that was the point where we were then allowed into the high school weight room. And I remember like waiting for that day with bated breath and like really loving the idea of getting in there. I was playing rugby union at the time, and started lifting weights because I wanted to be a better footy player. I was a mediocre football player. I wanted to be slightly less mediocre. And yeah, I sort of fell in love with it there. I've been lifting weights then for the best part of 13 or 14 years now. I sort of fell away from it at one point. because I discovered drinking as an 18-year-old and traveling through Europe. But then I got back into playing footy and started lifting weights again, and yeah, then went from there.
Excellent.
And what about you?
Okay.
How did you get into lifting?
Me now. Okay.
Well, I feel like this has got to be a back and forth
yes,
thing.
Yes, definitely. I agree. It's a conversation.
It is.
So
awkwardly looking at the camera. And the fan.
I started lifting weights when I was about 14 years old. I was a really, really big fat kid. And
preach, sister.
Yeah. Hit that. My older brothers were both quite fit. My eldest brother was into weights, and he'd put on some size, you know, as an older teenager, so kind of wanted to follow in his footsteps. I grew up in New Zealand. I'd moved away to Australia living with my dad, and he picked up some weights for me, so I started at home and had a bit of a home set up. And then, like many people, wanted to, after losing a little bit of weight, wanted to be a bodybuilder, so
yep.
went down that trick.
Got yourself some fake tan and the G-string?
I didn't go that far, but I did
disappointed in you, Thomas. I thought you were better than that.
I did buy Arnold's Encyclopedia of Modern Bodybuilding and read it every day.
It's sitting on the shelf over there?
It's right over there.
Yeah, awesome.
I had Pumping Iron on DVD, which I still do, and Ronnie Coleman's Costa Redemption number 2. I watched those two religiously and wanted to be a bodybuilder.
Yeah, nice.
And so that was my journey into lifting weights.
Yeah, awesome. And so how did that then lead you to powerlifting? Was that like a natural progression because you realised that you don't actually want to be that skinny and tanned? Or...
Well, I think, didn't have the discipline to do dieting.
Yeah, me neither.
I never got shredded.
Never have, never will.
Never got shredded enough.
Yep.
The fat kid is always going to win that battle.
100%.
I actually wanted to do Olympic lifting.
Yep.
Cool. So, when I looked online for Olympic lifting when I was like 17 years old, there was one club called Cougars, which is about half an hour from here.
I've heard of Cougars, I think.
Yeah, and there was only, on the website it said there was only a 2-hour training block, 3 to 5pm, yeah, on weekdays, and it was about $300 a month. So, A, Dad wasn't going to drive me half an hour to do weightlifting, and he wasn't going to pay $300 a month.
Yep, fair.
So I was already doing squat, bench, deadlift as my main movements.
Yep.
And some poking around on some forums led me to bodybuilding.com powerlifting section.
Classic.
Strongman section.
Yep, I remember that.
And it went from there. I did my first comp when I was 18 and I'm still going at 28.
Nice.
What about you? When did the powerlifting bug?
I sort of got heavily into training at the end of 2008. So I was like... 19, 20 at that point. I was still playing rugby in Canberra. That was the point where I was making the switch from Colts, which is like under 20s, to up to grade rugby, so playing with real men. And I realised I didn't quite cut it physically, especially having spent a solid 6-month period in the year after I finished high school in Europe doing nothing much other than drinking. Mm-hmm. And so I decided I want to take things a little bit more seriously, and I went to my high school footy coach, Aaron Booth at Grammar, and said, mate, I need to be a little bit fitter and a little bit stronger to play some grade footy. And so I trained with him like 5 days a week for like 3-4 months. I think I dropped something like 15 or 20 kilos over a couple of months and ended up playing first grade that year. While I was still playing footy, I'd sort of slowly started discovering powerlifting online. Like I was saying to you before, I watched that video of Ronnie Coleman in his Inza suit and his knee wraps, and I distinctly remember as a relatively young person to the sport thinking that he was cheating, wearing all this extra gear that allowed him to lift more weight, which is rather ironic given my per chance for equipped lifting. Nowadays, but I just sort of discovered powerlifting that way and started realizing that actually that was really fun and I liked lifting heavy. And so at one point I was training for like playing rugby, so training twice a week for rugby, playing on Saturdays, but also doing like 4 powerlifting sessions a week. I did my first powerlifting meet in 2010, the Elite Physique Battle of the Gyms, where I thought I knew what I was doing with cutting weight, and my little brother still gives me shit about that time. He found me on the couch at home wrapped in Glad wrap and having used all the hot water in the house. It didn't work. I didn't make weight, but whatever.
So how do you make weight for the super heavyweights?
At that point, I was like 106 kilos, man.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, yeah. When, like, when I was playing footy, I played my best footy at like 108 to 112. So I was trying to make it in the hundreds. I think I weighed in at 100.2 because I had no fucking idea what I was doing. Had just seen some stuff about cutting weight and thought it was a good idea. It's not, for the record.
Hence, super heavyweight life.
Exactly. It says, the CWS says it's the no stress weight class, that's except it. For on your heart and on your knees. And yeah, so I did that, fell in love with it. My rugby career came to a somewhat abrupt end when I decided it was a good idea to punch one of my opposing players in the face. I broke my hand and said, after getting plates and screws put in my hand, I said, I'll take 6 months off for the rest of the footy season. I'll train for powerlifting and then I'll come back and play footy next year. And I never went back because I realized powerlifting has all the fun parts of playing rugby, which is like hanging out with your mates and lifting heavy weights, and none of the shit parts, like running. And now I just watch rugby and compete in powerlifting.
All right. So the first time I met you, and you probably don't remember meeting me, because we probably just said, hey, in the warm-up room, was Nationals 2012.
Yep. That was the day I taught Matt Stenzel everything he knows about sumo deadlifts.
Okay. I'm going to speak for Matt here and stop you right there. Let's continue. So Nationals 2012, there was a group of juniors. There was about 13 of us.
Yeah, it was about a flight worth. It was like you, Stenzel, I think it was Kelly Munro.
Kelly was there. Reese?
Yeah.
Reese something.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's where we first met. You were a slightly less bearded and...
Significantly less bearded.
And slightly less super heavyweight.
Yep.
What lifts did you hit that day?
Oh, fuck, don't ask me that. I actually found my videos the other day for that on an old hard drive.
Okay.
Yeah, it would have been like a low 200 squat. Like maybe I squatted 240. Something like that in reps. I think I benched, maybe like 140, 145. I think I pulled 250, 255, something like that.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember. I was still am relatively mediocre, but that was my first raw nationals because I did 2011 Capo Nationals equipped.
Yes.
That was my first real equipped meet. Uh-huh. And then, GPC came about and I did that raw.
Uh-huh.
What did you hit that day?
That day I squatted 232, I missed 240. So I did a test day 2 weeks earlier and someone walked into the bar on my opening squat, 220. Awesome. And I tore my adductor.
Mad.
And I didn't know it was torn, it just hurt.
Yep.
I didn't know what a muscle tear was or what it felt like, so I still competed. So that hurt, but I got 232, which at the time was... No, it wasn't a PB, it was almost a PB. I benched 142.5, which was the junior national record, because...
There was no other records.
The Federation had been around for about 12 minutes.
Nothing like climbing records by setting empty ones.
Exactly. No, I did break a record.
Oh, you actually broke it?
Yeah, but nice. It was significantly lower.
Yeah.
And I deadlifted 250 with a hook grip. Because I used a hook grip.
Why don't you anymore?
Because it hurts my thumbs.
It does hurt, doesn't it? I had this discussion with someone the other day. Like, I'm going to wear my thumbs out with a hook grip. I'm like, it feels great at 140. At 240, it doesn't feel so great.
No. All right, so that was 2012.
Yep.
To date, what are your best lifts?
So I've done most of my lifting equipped. My best equipped lifts are a 410 squat and a 210 bench.
Uh-huh.
I've hit a lot more than that. I think I hit 230 in training in the bench, but had a really shitty day benching that day. My best deadlifting competition's 262.
Yep.
And then best raw, I've hit a 260 squat and a 155 bench.
Uh-huh.
In
the gym, right?
No, in comp. Yeah, so I hit
which
two...
Which comp did you?
I think it was like Pro Raw 6.
Ah, yes.
I hit the 260 squat and the 155 bench.
That's right.
Yeah. But I've only ever deadlifted raw because I'm too fat for a deadlift suit.
Uh-huh.
What about you?
Wait, you're 410 and you're 210. What was that at 2015 Nationals?
Yes.
Ah, that's right. I won that comp.
Yeah, you did. Who squatted more, though? This guy.
You did. I'll give you that. My best raw lifts in comp are a 320 squat, 192.
That was a 320 squat that should have been like 335.
Yeah.
It looked very easy.
No, it looked a lot easier than what it felt.
Yeah, but it always does.
Yeah. A 192.5 bench and a 320 kilo deadlift.
Yep.
And in equipment, my best squat is 375 and comp 227.5 bench and 320 deadlift, because every time I touch a deadlift bar in the suit, I screw up.
Yeah.
So, only in comps. In training, I do it perfectly. Yeah, yeah. But in comps,
that's the funny part about me.
The two comps that I've done equipped.
Yeah. How did you get into equipped lifting? Like, because obviously, I think, like most of our sort of generation of lifters, we came into this, I think, probably just after, or sort of just as raw lifting was becoming a thing.
No, when I started in PA where it was just powerlifting. There was no raw or classic or anything like that.
Yeah.
So I didn't know what equipped lifting was. All I knew was that I was doing powerlifting. So I saw people getting into these funny suits and I was like, I thought we were just lifting weights.
Yeah, yeah.
Didn't
realize it was a bondage convention.
Yeah, no, not at all. So I found out about equipped through bodybuilding.com forums, you know, and being exposed to the Multiply West Side American style stuff.
Yeah, SPF depth.
I can't really remember how I got fascinated with equipped lifting, but I've always had a great deal of respect for it. Like my dream comp is the IPF World Champs equipped.
Couldn't agree more.
You know, my favorite lifter of all time is Carl Christensen.
Yeah.
You know, watching him kind of embodied everything that I like about technique, that I like about lifting, that kind of technical approach, real clean style of lifting, big lifting.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
And a really calm approach to lifting in general. It's very calculated. I really like that. So, yeah. You know, that kind of made me fall in love with equipped lifting enough to the point to want to have a go.
Yeah, yeah.
So I got some single ply gear and threw it on and did a comp in the very end of 2014. And then in 2015, at the previous Nationals, so 2014 Nats, I coached about 30 lifters, and I knew 2015 was going to be big because they hadn't yet capped the numbers.
6 days.
So it was 6 days.
We had 320 something lifters.
Yeah, even more maybe.
No, it was 320 something.
Ridiculous. Yeah. I had 45 to coach over the week. So the equipped lifting was on the Tuesday, so I decided
day one
I'd jump in equipped to get my lifting out of the way so I could focus on my lifters for the rest, and ended up putting up those numbers. So. Yeah, no, I do really enjoy and respect equipped lifting a lot, and I hope it does come back.
Yeah, so I fell into it through the Westside thing. Like, that was, I think, I ended up discovering powerlifting through the Elite FTS stream. Like, that's sort of where I came from. Like, I read a lot about, you know, Dave Tate and Wendler and those guys, and sort of discovered my lifting through there. And at that point, they were all heavily, you know, conjugate method, West Side stuff. And so I always wanted to lift Multiply. I always made the joke that it wasn't about being strong. It was about lifting in the most amount of weight, or the illusion of strength, which I, you know, now joke about, but it does take a lot of strength to do that.
Yeah.
I did my first meet in a Multiply suit. I've only ever squatted in a Multiply suit. My first real powerlifting meet was 2011 Capo Nats, and it was equipped. So I think that was always the way I was going. Like you, I love the technical side. I love how just precise it is. It's part of the reason I really like Olympic weightlifting, because I see a lot of similarities between Olympic weightlifting and equipped lifting in terms of how technical it is. Obviously, very different movements, very different speeds, different qualities, all of that sort of thing. But in my head, I see that sort of that real technical approach where in both a snatch or a heavy Multiply squat, if you get out of position slightly, you're screwed. Like, you're just going to miss the lift. And I think that was the thing that I sort of was drawn to in the equipped side of things. I think it's definitely made me a better coach and a better lifter now than I ever would have been otherwise, because it forced me at a relatively early stage in my powerlifting career to be very technical with what I was doing. which has helped me sort of develop my coaching eye and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, for me, I just wanted to lift real heavy weight.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it went from there.
So I've got a question for you. What or who do you look up to, if you had to pick one person, who do you look up to as a lifter, raw equipped, nationally or internationally?
So I have, like, I'm a big fan of your lifting. But I'm not going to blow your horn too much.
Okay.
I honestly have for quite a while believed Nathan Jones is the best lifter in the country.
Okay.
Or one of the best. He may not necessarily always be at the top. He's been competing now for over a decade, or thereabouts. But for me, it's his approach to his lifting. I think he's relatively technical about it. He knows what he's doing, but he also knows that it's just lifting weights. Like, he doesn't have that attitude where he has to walk around like he owns the joint. He's calm, he's cool, he's collected. He knows how to flick that switch to go from making jokes to hitting the platform in a serious manner. And I think he does that in a way that speaks of professionalism and an approach that, while serious, isn't so serious that he gets away from the fact that we are just lifting weights.
Uh-huh.
That's probably my sort of national one. I think on an international scale, I am a huge fan of CYC as well. Blaine Sumner's pretty crazy. He's just insanely strong.
Yeah. I've got a real soft spot for Blaine Sumner because he has two torn labrums.
Yeah, the torn labrum club.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can understand that. So yeah, I think Nathan's definitely one of my favourites in Australia for sure. And then internationally it'd be someone like CYC or something like that. What about you?
Yeah, well, I asked that question, and as you were saying your answer, I was trying to think of who I'd think of.
Have a classic ask a question and then go, oh shit, I don't have an answer for that.
Yeah. So, I think nationally, I'd have to pick Will Crozier. Yep. Like,
Will Crozier,
the Trap Lord. I think it just is. His last few comp performances have really sealed the deal for me. I'm biased because I get to watch the entire process.
In the same way that I'm biased with Nathan because he's from Canberra.
Yeah.
We hang out together and we're friends.
You see the whole process from in the gym all the way up to the competition and the way they compose themselves on the day.
100%.
And, I think Will has a really, really good way of doing the same thing that you're saying with Nathan and being able to... you know, to know when to switch on and to conserve that energy for where it matters.
Yeah, 100%.
And
you don't need to staunch everyone in the warm-up room just to get your lifts on the platform.
You know, there's a lot of people out there that are competitive. So immediately, yep, 100%. I respect that because I'm not a person that's really driven by
competition. Me neither.
Like, I'm very competitive on the day.
Yep.
You know, I want to do my best and I want to beat anyone that I can.
Yeah, 100%.
But I don't come to the gym with an attitude of, I've got someone to beat.
Yeah, me neither.
And so I have a real respect for people that have that and use that as drive to get better. And I think Will's got a very competitive attitude and he's going to keep working hard until he's right at the top. And at the same time, he has such a thirst for knowledge and growth in his own lifting and in his coaching as well. So I've got a tremendous amount of respect for that. Internationally, I think I have to come back and say CYC. Christensen, just
is he lifting anymore or is he still injured?
No, he's 105 kilos.
Really?
He's lost about 60 or 70 kilos.
Yeah, wow.
Because
he had a knee issue.
A lot of knee issues, And from what I understand, it's just the product of going from zero to 500 kilos in the space of a few years.
Yeah.
The demands of that kind of loading that quickly.
Yeah.
But just that kind of technical approach, the calm approach to lifting.
Yeah, 100%.
The equipped lifting in general, the fact that he's lifting the kind of weights that he's lifting.
Yeah.
I really like that. So he'd probably be my go-to. You know, I really love using your words, technical prowess. So
it's a good word. It rolls off the tongue nicely.
I love watching Positive's old deadlift videos.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, CYC is someone that really stands out to me internationally, but I'm a much bigger fan of what's going on in our national scene, because I think we have so much gold over here, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And I think in Australia, like, powerlifting is very much coming into its own. I think some people maybe sometimes get a little bit ahead of where powerlifting really is. Like, it is still just powerlifting. It's mm-hmm. a sport that 99% of Australia has never heard of,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of them will never hear of it. That doesn't mean you and I both aren't very passionate about it. Like, this is how we make a living. This is what we do. It's what we're passionate about. It's our hobby as well as that. But I think we're definitely, like, the Australian scene is very much coming into its own, and I think it'll be an interesting few years as we start to produce people like Will and you know, guys like that, and you know, guys like Wayne and that sort of thing, who are competitive on an international scale, not just
on
an Australian scale. And I think as we have bigger meets in Australia and we go down that road, we start to open it up to, you know, a whole new world of sort of international competition. So I think it's an exciting time to be a part of
powerlifting. Yeah, definitely, sure. Definitely. And as, you know, as it continues to grow, as we see these new people emerging, we're seeing a lot of lifters that are, you know, barely scraping their potential. You know, yeah. It's like you mentioned, Will, you know, we've got Pat Morrison has a long way to go in his lifting.
Yeah,
you know,
100%.
His performance at Pro Roar is just, you know, kind of scraping the surface of what he's really capable of.
When he doesn't have to cut a million kilos to make weight.
Rhys Keane's going to start pushing boundaries.
Yeah.
If Wayne Hallett gets healthy again, he'll be...
Oh, Wayne's always been up there in that realm. As long as he's healthy, he's always going to be competitive.
Yeah, Alex Simon, if he becomes healthy again, you know, he's on the mend again, you know, he could put up something mind-blowing. He
squatted like 400 on a safety bar.
Yeah.
Not that long ago. And it was insane.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's some real talent coming up, and it's exciting to think of what may happen. You know, we've been in it for now, you know, you say 7 or 8 years, have been in a tiny bit longer than that, you know, well, what's going to happen in the next...
And look, man, like, compared to, you know, like, obviously we're in Queensland tonight, at GPC States at Valhalla, and like as a competition in terms of the way it's run, the equipment that it's available, all that sort of stuff, like it blows out of the water anything I'd ever competed in my first year or two of powerlifting.
Definitely.
Like my first nationals in 2011, there was one monolift, it was on the platform, you couldn't have access to it for warm-ups unless you knew the right people. I walked my squats out. I didn't even walk my squats out. I was in my suit and I had my friend who was handling me and some random in the warm-up area. I would unrack it and then step out and they would pull the squat stands out. Yeah. Like classic.
Ghetto mono.
Yeah. And my opener was 300 and I went from, my last warm-up was 250 and I tweaked something in my hip as I stepped out to like set up. So I just cut it there and went straight to my 300 kilo opener. And yeah, like, where do you compare it now? Like, Scott's got 3 monos, 3 benches, 3 deadlift platforms, like all the weights you can need.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, I think the evolution has happened quite quickly and it will be interesting to see how sustained it can be over a longer period of time. Because I think powerlifting is the sort of sport where it's really susceptible. And it's, again, part of the reason I like guys like Nathan is... He's been doing it for a long time and he hasn't been talking shit about it. He hasn't been preaching his amazing ebook on, you know, Instagram. He's just been putting in the work for years and years and years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that a sport like powerlifting, you kind of get both extremes. You'll get someone who comes in and is amazing for 2 years and then you never hear of them again.
Definitely.
And then you get the guys like Nathan who are lifers. Yeah. Like he'll do this, you know, for a very long time. You get guys like that who have just been around for ages. You know what I mean? And like Barry Murray's a great example.
Yeah.
You know, people like that who are just able to keep going year after year. Like I intend to lift weights for the day I die. This is something I love to do.
Definitely.
Whether I'm competing for that time, who knows? But I think if we can get this crop of lifters that we have now and convince even just a portion of them to slow things down a little bit and keep pushing for the long-term gain, then I think that'll be a really exciting period to be in, you know, 5-10 years from now.
Yeah, definitely. So one of the things we wanted to talk about you know, and coming to the end of this podcast is what's the purpose of this? What do we hope to get out of it? And I think what you just touched on there, for me personally, would be one of the biggest goals out of
100%.
This, is to kind of push for that education, push to help make Australia have some of the best lifters in the world.
Because I agree 100%. I think we certainly have the potential for it. That, you know, there are some very, very strong people. There are some very, very strong, like, essentially kids, you know, people who've only been doing this for a year or two who are very strong and have this huge potential. And if, you know, if we can help just one of them be still competing in 10 years, I would consider this a success. Because I think the biggest thing people struggle with is they want to get so good so fast and they just burn out and lose it. And,
exactly.
You know, that's not the way to be really good in a sport. That relies upon being at your best in your late 30s. Okay, so minor camera malfunction because we're both hashtag professionals. So we're talking about, we're going to have four questions. It may be more, it may be less, but some questions that are consistent through anyone that we get on the podcast. Wait, you're going to start. Favorite lifting memory or memory around lifting? Doesn't have to be you, it can be anyone, any moment.
I think, you know, obviously being more well-known for coaching than lifting, it's a coaching memory for me.
Yep.
It's actually fairly recent, and it's Pro Raw 9, Will winning the 110s.
So yep.
That was the most electric moment of the comp. The loudest the crowd went, the biggest 100%. The crowd went. And it was just, he pulled a 365, it's just indescribable, the feeling of being there side stage while it was happening.
Yeah, yeah.
I think 100%. For me, that's a moment that'll stick in my head forever. And that takes over pretty much exactly the same moment which happened at Pro Raw 6. Annie Short pulled to win the Triple Crown, which was winning States, Nationals, and Pro Raw. She won $7,000 with her final deadlift, and it was the same thing, standing side stage, screaming at her and watching her pull this massive deadlift. So, you know, those kind of things are things that stick in your head forever.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So question number two, if there was one thing that you could pass on to someone who's just getting into the lifting game, what would it be? Like one piece of information, you know, one little nugget that they can carry with them through the rest of their lifting career, what would that be?
Three words, get a coach. Get a coach. If you're going to lift for 10 years and you're going to take the time to do it yourself and have to learn from all your mistakes for 10 years, if you, when you get to that 10-year point, if you could look back and put a price on having all the things bad that happened to you go away, having all the mistakes that you made disappear, and think of how much more progress you would have made if you'd done it exactly the way you should have done it from day one, guarantee the price would be,
yeah,
you know, a lot more than what you could spend on a coach.
Yeah.
So yeah, get it. It's something I wish I had done.
Yeah, yeah,
definitely.
I tend to agree on that front as well. Question number three is, what is something that you used to believe heavily in or you were fully vested in and you have since changed your mind about?
Oh, wow.
That's a harder one than it sounds.
Yeah.
Because I like to think we are both relatively open-minded guys. We are, you know, reasonably open to learning new things and having our minds changed on things. And I think it's an interesting one because it's something that I think a lot of people, especially in lifting and in that sort of realm, they say this is the way.
Uh-huh.
And I think people get a little too caught up in being like, this is the only way to do things.
Yes.
And so I think that this is a good example of maybe something you've learned or something you've changed that has sort of changed your mind on that front.
I think it'll be a technical aspect.
Yep.
One thing that I used to do myself and I used to preach heavily was to kind of arch up and back out of a squat.
Yep.
Like really amusing arch up and kind of throw your chest up. My answer to this question
is also a squat basically. But okay.
You know, this kind of false belief that chest up is the best thing that can ever happen. And, you know, as you understand a better application of biomechanics and understanding your torso should be one unit. You know, my mind changed on that, but definitely before it was always this idea of keeping your chest up and out and really throwing it up and out of the hole.
Yep.
I used to preach that hard, especially when I first started coaching, because I thought that was the best way to squat.
Yeah, cool. And in a slightly less lifting-centric thing, if you could sit down and have a meal and, you know, share an evening with anyone in the world, the caveat is they have to still be alive, because I think we both agreed that if you add dead into this, we can just open up a huge can of worms.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who's alive right now that you would love to sit down and eat a meal with.
So this one's easy for me. This one's Heston Blumenthal, the chef. I really, really respect anyone that's believed so hard in a dream that they're just willing to do anything and everything to make it happen. So the few things I really love about Heston, A, he cooks quirky, amazing, different food.
Yep.
B, he didn't train as a chef. He learned it all himself, and then he built his business on that.
Yeah, yeah.
See, he worked his ass off to make it happen. You know, if you ever listen to his story, you hear about how he used to sleep in what is now one of the most famous wine cellars on earth. You know, it was just a dank sort of area above his restaurant, the kind of the evolution of his restaurant over time as he's gotten bigger and better. And just his constant drive to innovate look at things from outside of the square. You know, I love that side of things, and it's something that I tried to do as a coach, is kind of, you know, push forward and think laterally and at the same time think logically and achieve big things out of it.
Yep.
So definitely for me, Heston. I think chefs in general.
Have you ever eaten Heston's food?
I haven't.
Yeah, so
the fat duck is my ultimate dream.
Yeah, so I was in England end of 2015, 2016, or was in Europe. And one of the things that my girlfriend and I splurged on at the time was we didn't go to the Fat Duck because we didn't have that much money.
And it's like a 8 or 9 month
waitlist. Yeah. Well, if we had the money, we would have booked in advance for when we were going to be there. But he has a pub across the road called the Hind's Head. It's literally just across the road from the Fat Duck. Mm-hmm. And so we ate dinner there, and it certainly wasn't cheap, but it was some amazing food. And it was one of those experiences that I'll remember for the rest of my life, because it was just me and my girlfriend sharing an amazing meal. And I think there's a lot to be said about bonding over food like that.
Definitely.
And a shared experience on that front.
Definitely. All right. John Sheridan, favorite lifting memory?
Look, part of me really wants to say Kev spewing at Nationals.
Kevin Huang, Australia's number one coach.
Yep. Hashtag spew for Kev.
Yes.
That was, and not just watching Kev spew in his final deadlift, but watching you have uncontrollable laughing fits for about 25 minutes afterwards.
While I was cleaning up.
To the point where your abs were cramping, and like, that was fucking hilarious. And Kev's never going to live that down. But I think in the same vein as you, my favorite memory is actually a coaching memory. And that's at 2015 Nationals again, same comp. I actually competed twice in that thing. I did the equip comp with you, where I squatted more, but we won't talk about totals. And then I competed again just for shits and giggles on Sunday, competing raw. I had a team of, I think it was 13 or 14 lifters, which for me was a huge team. I'd never had that many people before. And I realized that despite the fact that in 6 days I hit 2 PB totals, like I had a great time on the platform, I actually got so much more satisfaction out of coaching. And for me, that was the moment I realized I'm a coach, not a lifter.
Yes, absolutely.
And that was the moment where, like I said, I will continue to lift weights forever, but my drive is in coaching and helping other people, because I think I get a lot more satisfaction out of that than I do my own lifting.
Definitely, definitely. And I can totally relate to that. You feel every lift is success. Every single missed lift you wear is your own as well. And exactly. there's a really strong emotional connection.
That 100%.
It's a feeling you can't describe.
Yeah, I've watched lifters of mine go up, you know, to hit a squat or whatever, and I've been more nervous than they are, you know what I mean? And more nervous than I've ever been for my own squats.
Yes.
Or my own lifts. So I think it was that week that was a hectic week, but that was the week I realized I'm going to be a coach, not an elite lifter.
Uh-huh.
And I'm totally okay with that.
Yeah.
I get much more satisfaction out of it. There's also a lot more money in coaching than there is in being an elite lifter. But that's a whole nother kettle of fish.
All right. Number two. What's the most important thing that you, John Sheridan, can pass on to someone who's just getting into lifting?
Look, I love the coach thing. I think that's great. But I think along the same vein, it's the idea of patience,
mm-hmm.
right? I think too many people, and we touched on it earlier, too many people get into this sport with the idea that they're going to be great next year or great this year. And I think the best lifters, like Ed Cohn, is the perfect example of this, right? He was at the top for 20 years. To be in a position where you can continue to do this and continue to get better, not just do it for the sake of doing it, but to continue to progress and make improvements over a period of, you know, years and decades. Like I tell my lifters all the time, it's not about days, weeks and months. It's about months, years and decades. And I think if you can have that approach, like if I knew what I knew now at 15, holy shit. Like, I'd be a totally different person. But at the same time, I learn a lot in that 10 years. Like, I am who I am today because of that 10 years.
Definitely.
But I think too many people, especially young people, get into the sport and lifting in general with the idea that they have to be good now. And I think that's a much broader society-based problem as well.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think the big thing for me would be patience and just that idea that it's okay to not make 50 kilo gains every time you do a comp.
Yeah,
you know, 5 kilos is more than you did last time, and that, why not keep going for that little bit more?
Uh-huh.
So I think, yeah, that would be the most important thing I can impart on anyone. It's the idea of patience.
Definitely. Definitely. And number three, what is something that you used to believe fully that you've since changed your mind about?
So like you, I'm going with a technical thing in the squat. I think a lot of it comes from having a background or coming into a powerlifting through the Equipped and Westside side of things, I used to firmly believe that the squat should always start with the hips, right? The squat is a hip dominant movement. And so
breaking the hips very, so you think you can squat.
Yes, exactly. Right. So I used to be heavily into like a really distinct hip hinge and then squat down. And it was CWS and Max Ader who were talking about knees first. And I tried it one day and was like, oh, fuck. Uh-oh. I've been doing this wrong the whole time.
This is what a squat feels like.
Yeah. And so I think for me it was... And that wasn't just that, like, that one realization. It was that sort of... It gave me that idea that obviously there's more than one way to skin a cat.
Mm-hmm.
And I still teach a hip-dominant squat to some people. Because for some people, that's the best way for them to squat. Maybe it's the best way for them to learn, and then we progress to something else. But it was that moment of like, that was where I distinctly remember going, oh, that actually makes quite a lot of sense. It feels pretty good. And so now I sort of teach a much more fluid squat. Like not necessarily knees first, but not necessarily hips first. It's just the squat.
Yes.
And so I think that was... In recent times, the biggest thing I've sort of changed my mind on that front.
Awesome. So, if you could sit down with and have a meal with one person living, who would it be? Bearing in mind that you just had dinner with me before, so you can't say that.
Yeah, well, look, I'd never say no to another dinner. If you ever come down to Canberra, I know a great burger place.
Sounds good.
It was only in talking about this earlier that I'd even considered who would I think about that front. When you said Heston, like, I'm a huge Heston fan. I think he's great. Along the same vein, Anthony Bourdain, I think would be an amazing person to sit down and share a meal with, purely because I'm sure he's got some amazing stories. And it wouldn't be like me asking questions. It would just be me listening. I think he's one, to split away from the chef thing, because I feel like it's a bit weird if we both name chefs. Someone like Neil deGrasse Tyson or someone like that, I think he especially is a great example of bringing something that is really niche and can be really overwhelming and really, like, I think hard to grasp to the masses. Mm-hmm. Like, his whole idea is to bring science to the masses, right? And to debunk these stupid fucking theories that some people have. And I find, like, the idea of space travel and all of that stuff, I find really fascinating. I'm a bit of a space nerd like that. Like, I don't claim to know a lot, but I like the idea of thinking about space and that sort of stuff. And it always blows my mind to consider, you know, what the Earth is in the greater scheme of things. And so I think something like that, because again, I'm sure he has some amazing stories, but also the ability to make some really, really complex, deep, thick, dense subject really actually very approachable. And yes. I think that's a skill that I know as a coach is something that I value highly in myself and in other coaches. The ability to not, like, you know, you and I can talk about things in deep biomechanic yes. terms, but if you can't explain it to a five-year-old, I don't think you know what you're talking about.
Uh-huh.
I am fortunate that I have worked in childcare, so I can explain things to kids, and I like that as a skill. I think that idea that you can take a subject that is deep and really dense and break it down into the pieces to make it acceptable and accessible to anyone, regardless of their background, regardless of that. I think that's a really endearing characteristic, and I think would make for a really interesting conversation.
Definitely. Definitely. You're a really deep guy.
Are you saying I'm fat?
No. No.
Okay, cool. So...
That's us.
That's us done.
That's who we are.
Whether next time we have a name or not, who knows?
We will.
We'll have a name.
We'll have a name. We'll have a name. So maybe we touch briefly on what we're going to talk about next time, basically the subject matter. So we were going to talk in episode one. We'll be talking about training theory, talking more about our kind of systems-based approach to training and kind of picking each other's brains around what we believe in terms of... in terms of our coaching systems and the best way to produce the strongest people.
Yeah, sweet. Until next time.
Thanks for tuning
in. Tell your friends.